Good morning, everyone. Thank you all for coming. As I said, we have about an hour and 10, 15 minutes, so I want to get as much packed into this session as possible. We're very happy and honored to have with us today Jan Kubis, the Minister of Foreign Affairs for Slovakia, Republic of Slovakia. Let me just say very briefly that just when we thought the new EU members have become typical, ordinary, boring, sleepy countries, like most of those in Western Europe, in the past few weeks we have witnessed some new developments, the formation of some would consider controversial governments in Poland and Slovakia, a major political scandal in Hungary, which has resulted in mass demonstrations. We don't know where this would lead, where this will actually lead. And, of course, the Czechs, who haven't yet formed a government. So how does all this turmoil, this unpredictability impact on transatlantic relations, on regional stability, the development of the European Union, potential for further enlargement, etc., etc. And I think in this context, Slovakia, which has been a very staunch Atlanticist during the past 8 years or so, is perfectly positioned to give us a good overview of where things are heading, not just on the US-Slovak relationship, but I would say transatlantic relationships in a broader setting. And I'm very happy today to have with us the Foreign Minister, who has a distinguished and very intensive international career. Just very briefly, Jan served as, before becoming Foreign Minister, he served as Special Representative for Central Asia and Secretary General for the Organization of Security and Cooperation in Europe. Prior to that, has several other posts, but he was permanent representative of the Slovak Republic to the UN office in Geneva, as well as the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade. So he has vast experience in security, economic, international economics, regional issues, of course, and transatlantic relations. Before he starts, let me just also welcome Ambassador Katar. Rastislav is a good friend of the center, and we're very happy always to have him here. Also, thank you very much to Friends of Slovakia and Ambassador Ted Russell for helping us to organize today's event. So, Jan, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Janos, and thank you very much, all friends and colleagues here. I am very glad to see you here. I know many of you, and it's fantastic to be back here to Washington. It is indeed in my new capacity, but this is definitely not my first visit to Washington, and I attended a lot of conferences and made presentations, but this is really the first time that I make it on behalf of my country directly as foreign minister of my country. It's a great pleasure to be here. And indeed, no doubt, some 3-4 years ago, all countries of Central Europe, the Visegrad countries, you know, they were in the limelight as examples of almost only positive developments and new members of EU and NATO and economies developing, sometimes with certain problems, etc. And quite of a sudden, out of the blue, there are certain developments that are creating questions. Is it out of the blue? Perhaps not. Perhaps not. This transformation is a long-term process. You know what was the starting base. Although some 15 years have passed, still the challenges, many of the challenges are there. We are consolidated democracies. That is one message that I would like to deliver here. Doesn't matter what, doesn't matter different configurations, doesn't matter whatsoever problems, we are consolidated democracies. There is no chance of any turning back on that. Secondly, we are, all of our countries, including my own country, we are staunch, good members, loyal members, but active members and self-confident members, increasingly self-confident members of NATO and the European Union. And it concerns all the parameters of membership, be it the principles, be it the basic orientation, be it the allegiance to work as loyal allies or good partners in the European Union, but also as net contributors to security and stability in our part of the world and net contributors also to spreading in the neighboring areas the concepts of democracy, transformation, stability, and security. I would like to underline this. We are now active partners in working with our neighbors in many areas. And now to Slovakia, this is reflected also, for example, in our foreign policy priorities, because among them you will find regions like Western Balkans or new neighborhood area for the European Union, notably countries like Ukraine, Moldova, Belarus, but also the Caucasus countries, and a longer shot, but nevertheless, Central Asian countries. I'm particularly interested in Central Asia for an obvious reasons. I have been dealing with Central Asia in the past 15 years and in the past year as EU Special Representative for Central Asia. And I spent 1 year wearing my UN hat as head of the peacekeeping mission in Tajikistan in 98-99. So I have this kind of direct experience. But coming back to my country, indeed, after 8 years of fairly successful government, I would say, I would never underestimate or try to undervalue the work of the previous government of Slovakia. Now we have a different government. The previous government, with the support of the whole cross-section of political forces in Slovakia, and I would like to make this point, it was not only the parties in the government, but also all other political parties, with some nuances, but nevertheless, all other political countries, parties in Slovakia, supported strongly EU and NATO membership. And during the previous government, we entered these two organizations' bodies. It's a major achievement. Another major achievement, I would not hesitate to say it, is the reforms in my country. There were, of course, problems, and we see problems. And the fact that in the process of reforming the economy of Slovakia fairly successfully, there were some other areas neglected, and there were very heavy social impacts on a good portion of our population that led to the change of mood in our population, and to the fact that now you see a different government backed by a totally different set of political parties. Yet, again, I would like to stress, we as the country, we are building on good achievements of the past, and we would like to continue building on them and developing them and furthering them further, paying more attention at the same time to the social issues. With regard to foreign policy, the best indication and example that nothing has changed with regard to the basic parameters as far as our foreign policy orientation is the fact that there was no discussion about foreign policy. Even when we presented the government's program in the parliament, there were some questions, but basically there was a unanimous confirmation. This country and this government will continue with the foreign policy orientation based on the priorities as they stand for my country. There is no change. So this is, in my opinion, it's a positive signal. We are confirming to our partners in the European Union that we do continue as we continued in many, many, if not all areas. We are, and I don't hesitate to say, staunch allies in the NATO alliance. We are strong allies of the United States, even in areas and operations that are fairly difficult and where we have some differences, perhaps, like in Iraq, and I will get to Iraq a little bit later. Even there, we are and will remain staunch allies of the United States of America and other partners in NATO. We will document it through our concrete activities. And as I said, we would like to show it not only working in the two bodies, NATO and European Union, but also working together with other partners in the two bodies, in the two organizations, in helping others to get transformed and to get better ruled and to see that indeed our ideas, our basic values will prevail also in other parts of the world. For Slovakia, we have a special responsibility this year and next year, because at the same time, we are members, non-permanent members of the Security Council. Since the beginning of this year, we are acting very, very actively discharging our responsibilities as members of the Security Council and as a member of the Security Council. And I'm very glad and I'm very proud to share with you a very high assessment we are receiving from our partners in the Security Council, but also from other countries in the areas like Middle East, that they are very happy with the way how we act there, that we are not biased, we don't have any sort of special national agenda, that we try to serve. We try to serve as good members of the international community in concert with our main allies, but we are also actively promoting and proposing ideas and solutions from our own Slovak perspective, without any specific agenda, and this is being appreciated. We look at the situation in an impartial and balanced way, but not balanced in a way to find a middle ground between two camps, doesn't matter what. It's a principle approach that sometimes being balanced means that you must take sides. Sometimes when you are balanced, you must say very clearly what is your position, what you accept, but also what you reject. And in situations like, for example, we are facing in the Middle East, this is a position that is earning us respect, both among the partners in the Security Council, but also among the parties on the ground. I just came from New York after the ministerial week of the UN General Assembly, when I had, I don't know, my colleagues, they counted around 40 meetings in 1 week with different partners and discussions, including in multilateral fora. And this, what I am telling you, is based on my direct discussions with so diverse partners like the United States, Canada, Qatar, Israel, Syria, Lebanon, etc. So we are now discussing with our partners and getting the feedback, because without this kind of feedback and reality check, we would not be able to understand whether we do things right or wrong. That was for Slovakia, but I will get back to one or two issues, and I will do it now, because I mentioned already Iraq as one of the examples where we think that we can act as good partners and allies. Doesn't matter that there are some adjustments of our position. In Iraq, my country has been among those who have joined the operation Iraqi Freedom from the very beginning. We took that decision, the previous government, as a confirmation of the fact that we consider ourselves to be good partners of our allies. And we are maintaining this position now. Doesn't matter that there was a change of the government, and doesn't matter that the leading force in the government, Social Democratic Party, SMER, before the election already, based on the feedback from the population and the wishes of quite a large portion of the population, said that we would withdraw the engineers that are serving now in Iraq as such. But we are not leaving Iraq, and we are not leaving our allies, and we are not leaving the Operation Iraqi Freedom. We are reconfiguring our forces, we are changing the quality of the forces, and we will remain there, not only with the flag, but also with meaningful participation, because what is the intention is perhaps to reduce in number, but to increase in quality. We would like, for example, to be a part of both operations Iraqi Freedom there, providing instructors and trainers, and also of the NATO training mission in Iraq. So this is something that I wanted to mention. This is the way how we consider the fulfillment of our obligations as good allies, as I said, of the United States, of the multinational forces there, of Iraq. Because we are discussing this issue, for example, I have been discussing the issue with Secretary Rice, and I will have my meetings today through which I will discuss it. But we also visited Prime Minister myself and Minister of Defense Iraq some 3 weeks ago, And we had discussions with the leadership of Iraq, and foreign minister of Iraq visited our country a week ago or 10 days ago to discuss what are their needs and perceptions. This is the way how the new government of Slovakia is acting, combining both parameters, the wishes and merging them, the wishes of our population, but also our obligations as good allies. With regard to other topics that are on the agenda, because I was told that I should leave some time for questions, and I'm only happy to do so, I would say that we act as responsible partners and actively engaged partners in both the NATO alliance and in the European Union. As far as NATO alliance is concerned, we consider that we have a strong mission not only in the original design of for NATO was created, but also in other areas. So, for example, we consider that as a part of this mission, we would like to see a NATO enlargement continuing. We are in favor of open-door policy of NATO. We consider that in specifically in the Western Balkans area, NATO must enlarge. We are in favor of getting new members, not as only a political act. Of course, they must fulfill the criteria. It's not the question of being soft on that. But we consider that, for example, the Western Balkans area, without this stabilizing factor of NATO membership for the countries of Western Balkans, we cannot speak about stability and security of the European continent, and perhaps also farther than that. So this is one of the elements. But we think also about countries like Ukraine. We as Slovakia, we would like to see and support the Ukrainian wishes as far as they can identify themselves, these wishes for themselves. At this point of time, as you know, they have slowed down a little bit. Nevertheless, Prime Minister Yanukovych, when he was in Brussels some 10 days ago, 1 week ago, to speak to the NATO allies, he himself confirmed that they are in favor of extensive and even more extensive cooperation with NATO partners. And we are among the countries, not all of the allies are of the same opinion, we are among the countries that we should support them as strong as possible in these intentions. One of the problems Prime Minister Yanukovych mentioned is that there is a misperception about NATO, about NATO's role, and there is also a lack of understanding what the alliance is all about, and therefore lack of support, and that without having more public support for NATO, they would not wish to go any further. Our offer to our Ukrainian partners and also to our NATO allies is that Slovakia is ready to act as NATO contact point embassy in Kiev. This is about public diplomacy, this is about gaining support, this is about explaining what the alliance is about, and that would be coming from a country that is respected in Kiev, in Ukraine, in all the strata of the society, and all the political forces, be it the camp of President Yushchenko or the camp of Prime Minister Yanukovych. They basically expressed their support for this idea. And I was very glad to report it back to our colleagues in the headquarters, at NATO headquarters in Brussels. But for NATO, we are also of the opinion that there is no more crucial task for NATO, political but also otherwise, that its engagement, our engagement in Afghanistan. And therefore, we have our troops there, and we would like again to make their presence there and our contribution to the NATO operation in Afghanistan more meaningful, more effective. So a part of our considerations as the new government is not only to maintain our presence there as it is now, but to see whether we can make it more effective and more meaningful to the operation, NATO operation now, at this stage and tomorrow's stage of our activities. With regard to the European Union, again, a very similar approach, but even broader than that. Once again, we think that we must provide a very clear European perspective to the countries of the Western Balkans. that it's impossible to have stability and security and good development in our region without providing a very clear European perspective to not only the countries that are already on the way or negotiating their membership, like Croatia, and by the way, going farther, like Turkey, because we support also EU membership for Turkey. It might take some time, it will take some time. It will be a long process, and of course, at the end, it will be a political decision, not only a technical decision. Nevertheless, we would like to see the negotiations continuing. But Croatia and many other countries, and at this point of time, as our very important contribution to the process is there, we think that we must give a very clear signal about its political perspective also to Serbia and to Bosnia-Herzegovina, but to Serbia. And you know what is happening around Kosovo. Kosovo, it's a very, very, very difficult, very sensitive issue. And it's an issue of stability and security of the region. It's not only an issue of stability and security of Serbia or of whatever will be the final result of this discussion about Kosovo status. And therefore, to counter the doom and gloom in Serbia, to counter the thinking in Serbia that is leading towards more and more extremists thinking in the country, and that is bringing the country into a more and more into a sort of self-isolation. We are of the opinion, as Slovakia, that we should provide now a good European perspective also to Serbia. And we understand, of course, and we tell this to our friends in Belgrade, that they must do their part of the job. A part of the job is to cooperate with the Hague Tribunal. But we should at least work in parallel. Otherwise, we would simply fail in our tasks. And with regard to Kosovo, just a small remark. We are in support. We support the activities of President Ahtisaari. He is preparing certain recommendations, and we will take our decision on the basis of his recommendations. He will prepare them soon. But we are, as many others, also of the opinion that a status quo is impossible. Simply, we must move and find a solution for Kosovo. It's impossible to keep it in limbo because it's destabilizing. So one must give a perspective also to Kosovo. And perspective, long-lasting perspective for Kosovo, for the stability of Kosovo, but also of the whole region, is such a solution that would provide all the necessary conditions for the Kosovo Serbs to stay there, to remain in Kosovo. That's the prerequisite. Otherwise, we will fail as the international community. And here, the heavy responsibility, funny enough, is not on Belgrade. Belgrade most likely will not cooperate on the issues of Kosovo. Whether I like it or not, but political leaders in Belgrade, they are not courageous enough to face the reality, at least not courageous enough to speak openly about the reality. But here the heavy responsibility is on Kosovo Albanians. They must take the steps as necessary, and they must create the conditions that would prevent any sort of exodus of Kosovo Serbs from Kosovo. This is a particular issue, but of course particularly sensitive for the whole region, including for the countries in the region, and also elsewhere, because you see already what are the indications coming from the Russian Federation, but also from such regions as Transnistria of Moldova, when they had a referendum the other day, confirming that based on the, as they perceive the example of Kosovo, they have the right for secession and for joining the Russian Federation. So you see how important it is to deal well and in a responsible way with the issue of Kosovo. As you see also from this explanation, European Union at this point of time is maturing. It's the European Union in the process of enlargement and continuous enlargement, but also in the process of stabilization. Yes, on the way we have a lot of questions. You know about the failure, up until now at least, of the process of ratification of the Constitutional Treaty. And now we are thinking about what is the way out, and the current Finnish presidency, but also the future German presidency, will discuss on the basis of the agreements reached under the previous Austrian presidency, what is the way out of the situation for the European Union. At the same time, European Union is more and more assertive, more and more courageous, more and more proactive in assuming responsibilities not only in the direct matters of the European Union, not only in the adjacent areas like Western Balkans or New Neighborhood, but also in the areas, and I would return back, in the areas like Middle East. You see that in many aspects, now it is for the European Union, and the European Union wishes to do so, to take take over some more responsibilities, even not a sort of the lead. If I speak about the Middle East, I speak about the region from a much broader perspective. Have a look at what is the role of the European Union with regard to Iran. Iran, it's a case where indeed the European Union is one of the lead factors in trying to find a solution that would not bring confrontation but real diplomatic solution without being, soft on Iran, on the matters where one must not be soft. When Iran is trying to develop a nuclear weapons capability, this is against the interest of the European Union, definitely against the interest of my country and many others. But a similar proactive role of the European Union you see in the areas of New Neighborhood, and you see a similar role, proactive role, in the Middle East more and more as members of the Quartet in the Middle East, but also as the European Union itself. We would like to be more and more a proactive part of the solution. And here, very often, when speaking about institutional transformation, but also this activist policy, there are questions how it works with regard to NATO or with regard to the United States. And I believe that we should not forget that, indeed, these are two different categories. What we have in common is the basic mission. It's stability, it's security, it's democracy. And democracy, it means also combating the new challenges that are destabilizing the civilized world. And it means new challenges, first of all, the challenge of terrorism. Here we are on the same boat. Here we work together. But do we have always the same perceptions, the same interests? Not necessarily. And we should sometimes say that it is indeed the case. Sometimes European Union would like to perhaps negotiate more and not to go into a sort of quick solutions. Sometimes and very frequently, and even as a matter of policy, the European Union is speaking and promoting effective multilateralism. And this will remain as a part of the policy and approach of the European Union. Does it mean that the transatlantic relations are getting weaker? Not. Can't be, because the basis is once again the same. Is the basic values and is the basic objectives and is the basic mission. So in this, what is needed is more active cooperation and coordination, exchanges, consultations, and working together in open minds. Therefore, when speaking about transatlantic relations under the new conditions, it's simply more activities, more action together that is needed. I believe that we see the examples. Notably, in the past years, we have more and more contacts and consultations between the United States and the European Union, for example. And I can speak from my own perspective because, I was dealing for 1 year as EU Special Representative for Central Asia with a whole range of issues, not only on matters of Central Asia. And I saw the endless number of visitors, be it from Brussels to Washington, but also from Washington to Brussels, and good meetings and good coordination, not perfect coordination. Even in the area of Central Asia, I was not very happy to see a sort of disharmony, at least from the point of view of synchronization, and maybe even more as far as, for example, the question of Uzbekistan is concerned. Here, we were not working hand in hand, at least, as I said, not from the point of view of measures and steps applied. And I was very unhappy to see this. I also am not very happy to see that we cannot cooperate as EU and NATO as well together as we should. We, as Slovakia, we are in favor of putting this proclaimed strategic partnership into practice. We need to do better between the two organizations. But if I look at the situation from a broader perspective, we are improving our cooperation. So I'm pretty confident that the future of transatlantic relations is okay, is bright. And as I said, with the new membership, with the spreading of the area where basic approaches and values are being applied in practice, in practical policy, to cover also Western Balkans, perhaps some countries of the new neighborhood as well, we are adding to the stability of this basic ground for transatlantic relations as well. And not only with regard to our own regions, but also with regard to the regions so unstable, so challenging as the Middle East or many other parts of the world. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Jan. We covered a lot of ground there, a lot of questions, I'm sure. Let me just say very quickly that you didn't mention Montenegro, where Mr. Lajčak, a Slovak official, played a very constructive role both prior and during the independence referendum. Presumably Slovakia supports EU and NATO inclusion for all these countries, Montenegro, Macedonia, Albania, ones you didn't mention. Let me ask you specifically about the NATO summit, though, in Riga. What are the expectations? What would be the Slovak input, particularly on the further enlargement question?
Very well. So first, Montenegro. Well, indeed, and I'm very glad that you asked the question, because indeed the work of my compatriot Ambassador Lajčak was instrumental to find a solution for Montenegro and Serbia, and a solution that is absolutely pro-European or in the light of European values, and a solution that might also show an example for how to deal with this kind of or similar issues also in other parts of the world. In Montenegro, what happened, and this is the example that I would like to bring to your attention. You know, to have a referendum, usually you need 50% plus one, and one vote, and that is enough. But in the sensitive situation as Montenegro and Serbia were, we insisted, and Mr. Lajčak insisted, on having 55% plus one vote to get the referendum valid as an expression of the will of the population. It took some time to convince the leadership of Montenegro, Prime Minister Djukanovic, to accept this, because they claimed, but this is more than is the usual European norm. And yes, we told him, indeed, this is more. But this is a good way, because whoever will be able to get 55% plus one vote, then there are no doubts about the validity. And it will reinforce the argument. And it's better to go beyond and above. And this is what happened. They reached 55.5% in the referendum. You have a credible result. You have a democratic result. And even the losers, they had to accept it. I visited Montenegro as my one of my first visits to the countries outside of, well, in our region as foreign minister. And I talked to the defeated party. And they said, yes, with this kind of scheme, no problem. We do accept. We are not glad, but we do accept the result. That's why I mentioned also Kosovo as an example. And this was the message that I delivered in Kosovo, in Pristina, to the leaders of Kosovo Albanians. Take example. Don't give to the Serbs only what is the bottom line of their expectations. Give them almost the top line. of their expectations, then you can win them. And since they don't negotiate with you, you must take your steps to show that you are sincere in trying to keep this multi-ethnic character of Kosovo. And you are sincere in trying to stabilize the presence of Kosovo Serbs in the territory of Kosovo. So this is with regard to Montenegro. Another line we are taking concerning Montenegro at this point of time, and it's also linked to the considerations for the Riga summit to a certain extent, is that we say Montenegro, they declared very clearly their wish to become EU and NATO members. So take them seriously, let's work with them, let's give them this European and NATO perspective without lumping them together with other countries in the region, because then you are simply keeping them back from this. And why to create and add other artificial preconditions for Montenegro? They behaved well. They behaved clearly as a European country. So this is supported by the majority of political forces. So let's open for them this perspective. Let's start negotiations on PFP, etc. Let's not wait for Serbia and or any other country in the region. With regard to NATO summit in Riga, this is one of the lines. We would like to see that Riga will speak very openly about the NATO perspective, at least for those countries who will be able to reach that stage in 2008. Not during this summit. This is not an enlargement summit as we see it. This is more a transformation summit. Therefore, we would like to send a signal, but we would like to send it in Riga. We don't want to wait till 2008. And this concerns notably countries like Croatia, for example, that have moved forward in their transformation processes in working with NATO. I'm mentioning Croatia, of course. It's to be politically correct, the former EU. No, we as a constitutional name, we recognize Macedonia. I was thinking in the categories of OSCE Secretary General, and I had to be very careful about using the names in the organization, but we recognize Macedonia under this name. So it's Macedonia, it's Albania, for example. And to maintain that we are in favor of generally of NATO open door policy. Another part of our position with regard to NATO summit is to give impetus to the discussion about how to work better with our out-of-NATO area partners, how to strengthen our relations with countries that already work with us in places like Afghanistan, for example. And we would like to move forward with this. It's Australia, Japan, and many other countries. And to be also a bit more effective in working with them in practice.
Okay, thanks very much. Let's take several questions, starting with you. If you could introduce yourself, please.
I'm Steve Menekes. I was the U.S. ambassador to the OSCE until about a year ago. Mr. Minister, you are probably perhaps the most knowledgeable person with an insight about Russia of any Western foreign minister today, in my opinion. Certainly there are a few who are your peers. And with that in mind, I am very concerned. I just came back 3 days ago from a week in Moscow and also in your part of the country. Of course, we saw each other in Bratislava. And what concerns me is where Russia really stands on all these questions, which in a little way are brought to the fore with the upcoming decision on Kosovo, but the whole question of how Russia views Ukraine, and this is the question to you, Ukraine, Georgia, Transnistria, Central Asia. Because I think we can talk a lot and kid ourselves, But unless Russia is singing from the same hymnal in terms of the future of those countries, and I don't see that right now, I don't think anything will ever happen, ever is a long time, in the future of the countries I've just mentioned. And then finally, turning to Central Asia, how you see that situation, notwithstanding Uzbekistan, and the role of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which concerns me greatly as an effort to have a counterpart, if you will, to NATO, and that one more than the Collective Security Treaty Organization, etc. So it's a big question. It's an invitation for a speech, but I think it is one of the most important issues facing us today. And we talk about Georgia in NATO, we talk about Ukraine, but as I go around and visit very senior government officials in Western countries, in EU countries, they say, what the hell is the United States doing here? This isn't going to ever happen. And does the U.S. really mean it? But that's a portion of what the bigger question I'm asking, Russia's view of the situation of the future of these countries. Because without a similarity of approach, we will never get anywhere, in my opinion. Okay, sorry for the speech.
Thank you very much. If you could keep the questions a little bit briefer, so we have maximum time. We'll go round the table, please. Just a few more, Erica.
Erica Schlager from the Helsinki Commission. Good to see you, Mr. Minister. You had mentioned that you thought the economic transformation of the previous government was fairly successful but had some areas of neglect, and this may have been evident in the riots that took place in eastern Slovakia in 2004. Can you say anything about your government's policies towards the Roma minority, which arguably is an area of neglect from the past government? Thank you.
Adrian Hamada, State Department. Mr. Minister, many of us noticed that you broke with Slovak diplomatic tradition by going to Budapest first rather than Praha as your first foreign visit. Two questions. One is, could you assess the current state of Slovak-Hungarian relations? And two, Minister Gunc called for a meeting of the Bilateral Committee on Ethnic Minorities that was created under the 1995 Basic Treaty and that was supposed to meet on Tuesday. Did that meeting indeed occur on Tuesday, and what came of that, if anything?
Okay. Maybe just one more and give the Minister time to answer that. Please.
Thank you. My name is Patrick Hudak, and I'm from the State Department's Agriculture Office. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on the role that you see Slovakia and its neighbors, the newer entrants to the EU, playing in the WTO negotiations. Particularly when it comes to the very sensitive issue of agriculture. Thank you.
Right. So, indeed, quite a portfolio, you know. Russia, bilateral, internal, economic. Okay, good. First, Russian Federation. I'm not sure that I would have time to go into any sort of in-depth assessment of what is happening there. Simply, it's really for a dissertation. So I will respond by making a couple of points. First, whether we like it or not, Russian Federation now and in the coming period is different than it was 10 years ago. Is self-assured, self-confident. It's a sort of what they call controlled democracy. It's not a total dismantling of the basis of democracy, but it's controlled democracy. You see it in the area of the media, for example, where you see a total control, well, total control, a fair control of the electronic media, for example. But you still have a lot of opposition voices and newspapers publishing everything, you know. But it's a controlled democracy. And it's a country witnessing quite an economic growth development and a lot of money coming because of the prices of energy resources. And it's an assertive country, returning back, using mostly economic instruments to reestablish itself in the area of what was before the Soviet Union, except for, of course, EU member states. And it's competing with all of us there, sometimes as a competitor, sometimes even as adversary in certain areas. Just enough to study concrete situations where we act. And sometimes they would like to have us as partners. Mostly the European Union, I'm not sure about NATO, frankly, but mostly the European Union. I heard it when we discussed, and I discussed with different top representatives of the Russian Federation, the issue of Central Asia and some countries of Central Asia. And there even they discussed that they would not be against working together with NATO on certain issues, combating terrorism. So you have a very, very mixed picture, but you have a different Russian Federation. Assertive and empowered. And this is the reality we will face in the coming period. So we have to find the way how to work with them. This is a country that, in my opinion, is not thinking about joining the European Union. It's definitely not thinking about joining NATO. It's not thinking about joining any other body. It's establishing its relations with the external partners, always thinking about their own interests, and will keep that as the paramount criteria when constructing the relations, including with the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. They will work with the Shanghai Cooperation Organization in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, but will always try to see to it that it's not a sort of straitjacket, political or otherwise. They will not allow the Shanghai Organization to act against their interests. And you see it when they deal with institutional reforms, strengthening or orientation of work of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. It's, of course, eternal friendship and brotherhood and everything, and at the same time, absolute defense of their economic and other geostrategic interests, including when dealing with the partner countries in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, notably with China. Although when you talk to people in Beijing, they would also tell you, oh no, we are eternal friends. Of course. Of course. No doubt about that. And of course, taking this into account, we act as well. And we see potential possibilities, but also emerging constraints. Have a look at the new neighborhood policy of the European Union. We can move, we can do something, we can work with the Russian Federation, but only to a certain extent. Only to a certain extent. And there are areas where, frankly, perhaps we should not go any farther. Here, just to react to the remark, yes, myself, I think that we are too cautious as the European Union when dealing with certain issues. We should be more proactive. We should not be afraid to think about our new neighbors in the East as potential EU members, at least potential EU members. It's not telling them, welcome tomorrow, but it's not only to tell them, as many countries in the European Union do, transform yourself and then maybe in 10 years' time we will consider whether to consider you somehow for something in the future, and don't call us, we will call you. Right? This is not the right policy, in my opinion. Definitely not in my opinion. And it's not promising them membership. They are not asking at this point of time for it. That's the first premise, although some might be sending signals and requesting better treatment. Another point here that I would like to mention is close coordination with the United States. Close coordination with the United States. In this proactivist approach to many areas, we should work hand in hand together, notably in the new neighborhood area. Yes, we might be more active, we might take the lead, we will take the lead, we should take the lead in many of the areas of the new neighborhood, but it doesn't mean that we should forget about the synergy action and basically about what I said when I tried to define the relations, that our common basis is the same, that our basis is the same between the European Union and United States when thinking about many areas of the world. Common interest is the same. We have a joint mission and we will have it. Who else if not the EU and the United States? So just a couple of points, Ambassador, to this. But of course, it's a major, major topic. Yes, developments in Slovakia. Indeed, that was one part of that was a bit neglected. And on the other hand, here with regard to Roma, we will try to see this and to see to it that we will develop a more coherent approach and policy. But we would like to see also more cooperation with our regional partners and with the European Union on the issue. We don't believe that the Roma issue as such is only a matter to be dealt with at the national level. Of course, it's the first responsibility of the individual countries, of my country. And it's also true that somehow we cannot register major breakthroughs in the past in dealing with the issue. And indeed, as you mentioned, there were even some sort of riots because mostly of the economic and social factors, economic and social deprivation of Romas in Slovakia. And there were some other factors there as well present. Manipulation by the Roma leadership, some of them, it's a complex thing as usual, but nevertheless. So we have it on our agenda. I hope that we will be more successful than all the previous governments. It's not only the past government, but all the previous governments, so, and that we will be able to find some solutions for Romas. It's a major challenge. And it's even bigger if I look at the challenge and increase of this challenge with the enlargement of the European Union. We are incorporating Romania and Bulgaria. I hope that they will become members of the European Union as of the 1st of January next year. Think about this challenge concerning Roma and Sinti. It's quite a thing. Relations with Budapest, yes, indeed. Let's put it like this. When you have, as a part of political forces backing the government, Slovak National Party, instead of an ethnic party based on ethnic principle of the Hungarians that was in the previous government, you have to be double sensitive to the issues of minorities and Hungarians, but also other minorities, and to the issues of tolerance. And you must have zero tolerance to intolerance. And that was the motivation why I traveled, instead of traveling to Prague, that I traveled to Budapest, to confirm that this government will be extremely sensitive to anything that would challenge us on the issue of minorities internally, that we will not allow any deterioration here. And I brought that message. And the second message was, let's work together on this. With success or not? Well, not necessarily. And unfortunately, we had even some incidents in my country. But what we do, we act extremely swiftly to deal with this kind of incidence based on intolerance. As I said, we must have even double sensitivity whenever we feel, we smell that it might be a case of intolerance. We must act with determination, and in practical policies we act. So, and with the Hungarian colleagues, where I see, frankly, the red line is when we hear voices, not necessarily from the government, but members of different parliamentary assemblies, be it European Parliament or Council of Europe Parliamentary Assembly, questioning the right of my country to constitute a government based on free, fair, and democratic elections, results of the elections, and with forces that are not extremists, because in our country, none of the political party has any sort of extremist program. Might have a national program, and as I said, there are two parties, political parties, that are coming with ideas based on ethnicity. It's the Slovak National Party and it's the Hungarian Coalition Party. Right? And that's an eternal competition in multi-ethnic society. We have to deal with it using all democratic instruments, and we do this. But nevertheless, it created some problems. It's true. We are discussing with our Hungarian colleagues. I said, what is our red line? The red line is someone is going to tell us that you have no right to constitute a government incorporating legal political forces, legally acting under the constitutional order of the country. That is the red line, in principle. But otherwise, I'm prepared to not only discuss, but to work together with our partners, first of all, inside of the country. This is our responsibility in the country. But then, if necessary, with our Hungarian colleagues, in counteracting all tendencies of intolerance. And I expect that anyone else, including our Hungarian friends, will do the same in their own country. But it's their business. I don't want to link it. With regard to the Commission on Minorities, yeah, that was my proposal. I came there and I said, in case of need, let's use the instruments of our big treaty between the two countries. And when I saw this, let's say, grow of misunderstandings, I said, okay, it's high time now to get together this Commission on Minorities and discuss the issues, all of them, as they are on the table. And the Commission, the session of the Commission took place last Friday, and we agreed. We agreed on a number of issues together with our Hungarian colleagues. And it was a good session. It was not without open discussion. But we have a protocol, and I believe that the major elements are published. At least the messages from this meeting, they are public. So, again, we will work. I had last week, since Minister Gönc was the Hungarian foreign minister, was also attending this ministerial week, I had several discussions in the corridors, and we had some good 30-minute discussion tête-à-tête, speaking very openly about many issues. And we are now preparing, for example, a meeting of prime ministers of the Visegrad 4 countries on the 10th of October in Visegrad in Hungary, and we are preparing a bilateral meeting of our prime ministers to discuss all the issues as they are there. So again, it's don't take for granted when you read somewhere in the press that we have a crisis in our relations. We might have questions, we might have even individual cases, but this is a strong democratic country, I mean my country, able to handle these issues, first of all internally, as our own responsibility, but as needed, also working together with our neighbors, with the Hungarian neighbor. Our position towards the negotiations, WTO, well, we gave the mandate to Commissioner Mendelssohn, and we think that he is still and will be in charge of the mandate to negotiate. We are unhappy that we have not reached results in the process of negotiations. We collectively think that we made a good offer as the European Union, and we collectively think that it's more for the United States to take several steps further. This is the bottom line of our position as well, as far as Slovakia is concerned.
Okay, maybe a couple more questions. I think you've got about 5 minutes left. Not more than 10. Okay, maybe 3 questions. I think we started here, please.
Scott Thayer from the office of Senator John Sununu. It's a pleasure to see you here, Minister. One of the highlights of the new government, I think, is your appointment. Continuing the roundabout of the new neighborhood, if you will, the only we've talked about Russia, the Balkans, Ukraine. The perception here often has been that Prime Minister Fico has had an orientation towards the East throughout his career. I note that he traveled to Belarus in contravention of the EU no-contact policy a couple of years ago. I was wondering if those factors might suggest that Slovakia would be pushing for a reappraisal of EU policy towards Belarus.
Okay. I saw another one here, please. Okay. Last chance for questions, please.
Thank you. My name is David Frankel. I'm an attorney with the Federal Trade Commission. I've noticed that there have been some statements in these by the Slovak government, including Prime Minister Fico, about the role of what he's labeled as monopolies in the Slovak economy. So I want to turn internally just for a minute. If you could please comment on what the Slovak policy is towards these large companies that have been privatized, whether it be the Slovak gas company or major foreign investors who have come into Slovakia, for example, U.S. Steel, but that's just an example, the various automobile companies. And please comment on what the government's role is going to be with respect to these companies and its impact on negative actions against them, what that impact will be on the state budget in terms of helping the poor. So, for example, I've heard that the Slovak gas company contributes about 15 billion crowns towards the state budget to help the poor. If there are actions taken against those types of companies, what impact will that have on social programs in Slovakia?
Okay, thanks very much. Very last, I saw one other hand. Please, Sharon.
I'm Sharon Fisher from Global Insight. And following up on David's question, Fico made a statement sometime in July about how multinational corporations and the Hungarian socialists were somehow damaging Slovakia's relations or image or the image of Smer. And I was wondering if you could comment on that in light of some of the other things we've talked about.
Okay, we'll stop there. Yeah.
Right. Quick responses because I don't want to miss my next appointment. First, no reorientation of our foreign policy, full stop. Absolutely no reorientation. What we would like to do is to use the potential, if at all possible, of course, we don't know, but we would like to use the potential of enhanced economic cooperation with the countries like Russian Federation and many others, traditional partners, partners that were traditional not only for Slovakia, we are a young nation, but for Czechoslovakia, but from that perspective, no reorientation as such. As far as our policy, for example, towards Belarus is concerned, of course Prime Minister Fico will not do what did leader of one of the opposition parties that is on center-left side of the political spectrum, simply, with regard to Belarus. Of course Prime Minister Fico will not break the EU policy. We, as Slovakia, interestingly enough, are part of the EU Troika in Belarus and will be representing one of the EU member presidency country in the second half of 2007. We not only joined others in different statements since the inception of the new government there, we ourselves criticize our Belarusian friends on many things now as the new government, as the new foreign ministry. I don't know whether to link it or not, but only a couple of days ago, our landlord came to us and said, thank you, you must vacate your premises quickly. I have a better deal. I don't want to link it. I don't want to link it with the fact that there is no change in our policy with regard to Belarus. And it was expected, I can tell you. Many officials in Belarus, they thought, oh, now this is coming. It is not. It is not. Sovereignty. We are members of the European Union, but I can tell you that we will defend our sovereignty as much as possible. We know what we would wish to delegate to, what kind of functions we would wish to delegate to the organs, bodies of the European Union, as according, including of the draft constitutional treaty. We ratified it, therefore we are in favor of going as far as that. But we would oppose and prevent any infringement on our sovereign rights, for example, in the areas like taxation. We are not in favor of building a sort of supremacy over sovereign nations from Brussels. But we, as I said, we ratified the constitutional treaty, so these are the parameters within which we operate. We would like to see this happening, but we will be very, very careful. And with regard to your question, it's more an internal discussion. As you know, in Slovakia, there was an internal discussion. Eventually, the previous government received a clear green light to ratify, as I said, to go and support the constitutional treaty. So that much for the very specific question you are asking about. But we will defend our sovereignty. We will work in the European Union. We need to strengthen the European Union. But there are also limits. Monopolies. You know, we will maintain the investment climate in Slovakia that has been so favorable for us to attract investments as we attracted in many areas. Automobile industry, but only a couple of days ago, Sony Corporation announced another major investment in Slovakia. A couple of days, literally, if I'm not wrong. And we will not change our policy. It's true that this government is not necessarily happy with privatization of certain companies, but this is a country ruled by law. And therefore, we will not take steps that would mean, be it harming the investment climate in the country in principle, or that would be detrimental otherwise to the interest of economic development of my country. That concerns also the discussion about energy companies. We would like to see some better treatment, and I will ask my embassy if you are interested to talk to them, and they can provide you with some more detailed explanation what exactly we think when we would like to get better still market prices for energy resources, for example. It's not artificial regulation. It's still fair market prices. But why we are now so pushy with regard to the monopolies? And, excuse me, what was exactly, I put here European, and I can't read what I wrote based on you.
Fito made a statement in July about how international, multinational corporations and the Hungarian socialists were damaging.
Right. Okay. Multinational corporations, I believe that was this. That was basically, we feel that there was a sort of pricing policies or prices of energy that were not based they were very detrimental and when we compared the situation of energy prices in my country and how the prices are being built, structured in different through different components. So we recognize that we have a very specific situation in our country. But again, we can provide more detailed information on that. European socialists, I can tell you, yes, from the very beginning, but it was more, I would say, discussion based on ideology. There was, there is still an ongoing discussion concerning European socialism, whether a social democratic party can join forces in the government with a party with national orientation. And according to the opinion of many, this is not allowed. This is not good. If I'm not wrong, the origin of this bloc is based on what was the reaction of social democrats after what happened in Austria in 2000. And therefore, it has nothing to do with the actual situation in the country. It's in Slovakia. It simply happened that we have a government backed by this composition of political forces, and social democrats, they feel, or European socialists, that this is not appropriate, right? And now they are discussing what to do with a political force, with social democratic party SMER, whether they should suspend the participation of this party in the group of Europe, in the party of European socialists, or not. But it is not based on the concrete situation. Concrete policies of this government in Slovakia. It's more a theological discussion, if I'm sorry for using this word. But it's true that it's working adversely as far as the interests of my country is concerned, are concerned, and it's unfortunately creating adverse conditions for the implementation of the government's program in my country. And it's adding to this set of questions that might be there. That's the reality. What can I do with this? It's for them to discuss this in their circle, and hopefully they will take a wise decision. Prime Minister Fico is telling very clearly, guys, we have a social democratic program. If you can't help us, if you don't want to help us, at least don't damage our reputation by introducing this dogma into the discussion on what is happening in our country. Thank you.
Okay, I think we finished right on time. Thank you, Mr. Minister, for the breadth and depth of your presentation and answers, and you're always welcome back to CSIS when you're next in town. Thank you.